Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
47-yard attempt near hash. Chris Kula will hold for Sam Ficken. Put down. The kick by Ficken is on its way. The kick by Ficken is gone for the lead. Put down. Kick by Ficken is on its way. The kick by Sam Ficken is gone. And the Nittany Lions take the lead. 9-7 with 90 seconds to go in the half. Third and three at the 8 of Maryland. Near side, Gesicki and Lewis. Far side, James and Hamilton in the slot. Hackenberg takes it. Throws. Far corner, reaching up in the end zone. He's there. Jesse James. Touchdown. Penn State. Long far side. Trips to the near side, including Diggs in the slot. Shotgun for Brown. Four-man front. They rush four. Back he goes. In trouble. Tyrone Smith down he goes. Back at the 25-yard line with help from Nassib. And the Penn State Nittany Lions go to backup linemen and they attack. Tagula put down. The kick is on its way by Sam Ficken. The kick by Ficken is good. And the Nittany Lions take the lead with 6:52 to go on the fourth field goal of the day by Sam Ficken. It is 19-17 Penn State.
Well, that was Saturday. If it had ended that way, then we'd be having a different conversation today. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Sunbury Motors is where the studio resides. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street at Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Cambridge, 11 to 15, almost worse. What did they give you this week?
This week I have the Lincoln MKC, rather.
They put you in a Lincoln?
Well, we wanted to talk about being able to have an all-wheel drive safety and still have, you know, the comfort features that you would expect. So if you were normally looking at some of the more expensive luxury-style SUVs, Lincoln is the is a way you want to look, simply because the price is lower, and you still have all those great features, and it's an American-made product, including heated front seats, heated rear seats, and heated steering wheel.
To be honest with you, the vision of your heated seat does not go over big here. Okay, fine.
But I have to admit,
I realize it's a luxury, but I'm sorry. Right now, the visual is bothering me.
All right, how about the heated steering wheel? Is that better? I didn't even need my gloves this morning.
I'm fine with describing the heated seat for passengers in the back seat, but the vision of your heated seat, no.
And it's a 10-point heated seat as well. It moves to where you need.
I don't want to think about it. I'm sorry.
Lumbar support.
On behalf of Drew Kelly and everybody else that has a conscience, I don't want to think about the 10 points of your heated seat.
Heated driver's seat. Is that better?
Much better.
All right. I was using the lumbar support this morning because the back was a little stiff, so that was a nice little thing to loosen things up.
I'm sure.
You know, the heat helped loosen things up a little bit as well, kept things nice and toasty, and I actually used the remote it up.
Does the thing come with a masseuse? What the heck? Come on.
You can get it available with a massage seat. Yes, that is an option in some Lincolns.
You can get this incredible vehicle at Sunbury Motors. And again, we advise the seats are heated, which is incredible on a morning like this. And as we go through November, December, January, it is an incredible luxury to have along with the heated steering wheel. But just from me to all of you beautiful people out there, in order to sell the car, I want you to visualize that it is not Kevin's heated seat. Okay, we're done. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street at Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keyroots, 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf.
And Steve, by the way, I did tweet that earlier today at Kevin.
The people at Sunbury, the people at Sunbury Motors, by the way, are thrilled that I took the vision of your heated seat out of their minds.
Thank you. I did tweet the information at Kevin Herr on Twitter and also on my Facebook, so you can link up and see all the information on the vehicle that you should be driving come Monday.
Well, he's in a good mood because the Steelers are rolling. They are playing. Really, there are four teams right now, well, three from this weekend, that are playing at a level above everybody else. Those teams would be New England, Arizona, and the Steelers. Maybe the Dolphins you can put in there, and we know what Denver brings to the table. Okay, those are the five teams that are playing at a level that is beyond anybody else at the moment. And remember, the Steelers have gone out the last 2 weeks, and they have clobbered Indianapolis with Andrew Luck, and they've clobbered Baltimore. I mean, each one. Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com joins us. Dave, happy days are here again.
Well, I tell you, what a great day to join you after a big Steelers win over the Baltimore Ravens on a night where Joe Green's number 75 was retired. It was a heck of a game by the Steelers.
They played great, and a guy that's almost as old as Joe Green, James Harrison, certainly made a bunch of plays last night. I want to talk about the defense first, because you and I talked last week. You know, the MO of Dick LeBeau has always been, hey, get the lead and you blitz like crazy. He's blitzing from possession one now. Is that for him now? Hey, look, he's just going to roll it and just say that that's the way they have to play.
Well, I think the score had a little bit to do it. I think what was good in that game is they're getting pressure with looks that look like they're going to send more. You know, they'll show sometimes that they're going to send six guys, a couple will drop back in coverage, and they're able to create pressure by the illusion of sending more players. James Harrison, when he's in the game, he's not a guy that you're going to want to drop into coverage that often. You know, you're able to do that on the other side with Jason Worlds because, you know, he's younger, he's more athletic, and he can get out there in those drops. So, yeah, I think when you're seeing James Harrison, on the field, he's going to continue to probably split time with Arthur Motes on that right side when and if, you know, Jarvis Jones gets back in action here. So I like the way they're using him right now. He's dropped a considerable amount of weight since being signed. You can tell that he's also – he's in shape now. He's in football shape. And, boy, he looks like the James Harrison of several years ago right now. And he's got four sacks in the last two games. And there's no sign of him slowing down.
What about Blake in the corner and how he's played?
I was really concerned about Blake heading into this game. You ask yourself, could it be any worse than it was with Cortez Allen in there? And, you know, really it could be, but Blake, I thought, represented himself real well in the nickel defense. Now, you remember, Bryce McCain started opposite William Gay in the base defense when the Ravens, you know, rolled out their three wide receiver package, which ended up being most of the second half because they were down. Blake had to come in and play outside while Bryce McCain shifted inside. I thought Blake gave the Steelers a real good showing outside there. And he is a kid, in my opinion, that has a very short memory span. And you have to have that as a cornerback. And it's something that Cortez Allen doesn't have right now. You know, if Blake does give up a play, he puts it behind him. And, you know, I thought he, despite him being undersized, I thought he represented himself real well. And for the time being, you have to think that he's going to hold on to that number three cornerback spot, for the immediate future until Cortez Allen proves that he can win that spot back.
Offensively, we talk so much about what Le'Veon Bell can do with the ball. What kind of benefit has he given this football team because of how he plays without the ball?
Well, he's tremendous in blitz pickup without the ball in his hands. What they do with him this year as far as splitting them out wide is just another element. You know, a couple of years ago, we hardly saw the Steelers go empty set in the backfield. And very few times did we see, you know, four or five wide receivers on the field at times. Now they don't hesitate to shift Bell outside in the slot and go with the empty set. And, you know, you have to account for a guy like him. He made a huge catch on third down last night. I want to say it was in the third quarter on a third down, and the Steelers really needed to move the chains in that situation. And Roethlisberger is trusting him, and Roethlisberger's gotten better at stepping up into the pocket. And instead of forcing the football down the field, he's willing to dump that ball off to Bell. So, you know, Bell doesn't have to contribute in between the tackles as a runner, because he's shown that he can catch the ball out of the backfield. And in a few more games, he's going to break John L. Williams' receiving record for running backs.
When you look at Antonio Brown, fabulous, fabulous receiver, does so many great things. The emergence of having guys on the other side the last couple of weeks, what has that meant to the overall production of the Steeler offense because of the additional, now more dependable targets?
Boy, I don't know if you get, boy, that's so hard to measure, but it's obvious for sure. Look, teams couldn't shut down Antonio Brown before any of these guys emerged. And now you have Marcus Wheaton, you know, coming out of that game against the Cleveland Browns, the loss to the Browns. Wheaton was obviously not on the same page as Roethlisberger, but he has had a great bounce back since that game. He caught another couple of passes Sunday night. The week before against the Colts, I believe he caught five of all five balls targeted his way. And then you throw in what Martavis Bryant is doing. Teams have to respect that now. And Martavis Bryant, just not as a deep threat, because you're starting to see them use him more in the middle of the field as well. And boy, that what we call the, you know, Dino route combination on the second touchdown to Martavis Bryant in that game was absolutely a great play design. And Ben Roethlisberger was able to freeze the safety in the middle of the field with a pump fake. And because of the Dino, you know, the what they call it, Dino route combination, which was basically Marcus Wheaton and Martavis Bryant both running post patterns, that cleared out the middle of the field. And then when you have a big guy like Martavis Bryant, gives you such a big target, and he's hard to undercut because of that. So, you know, Antonio Brown was doing this before these guys started to emerge in the offense. And you can only imagine, you know, the sky's the limit right now, because Antonio Brown, I don't know if you saw in a couple of those catches in the third quarter, I believe, the tremendous work that he does after the catch. And not only that, the separation that he gets off of the line of scrimmage is just incredible, and it's a testament to how hard he works in the offseason and during training camp on his route running. So, I mean, the kid's already got, what, 70-something receptions? Through the first nine games of the season, he's going, you know, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to absolutely shatter the three primary receiving records, you know, in franchise history.
Can you explain the groove by watching tape that Ben Roethlisberger is in right now?
You know, he's not forcing the football any. He only has three interceptions all season. One came in week one against the Browns, and that was probably his worst, I believe, his worst throw of the season. The second was a tip pass by Haloti Ngata in the second game against the Ravens. That was tipped at the line of scrimmage late when the game was pretty much already in hand. And then, you know, he had the pass against the Ravens a couple of weeks ago. And I believe that ball might have been tipped or you know, the flight deflected, you know, that ended up in an interception. He's not forcing the football, and we talked about how he's willing to dump the ball down to Le'Veon Bell coming out of the backfield instead of trying to force some throws. So he is in a zone right now. I mean, 12 touchdowns in the last two games. Are you kidding me? I mean, he's just unconscious right now. And, you know, he started the game last night kind of slow. I think one of five. First five attempts, and then went on to complete, I think, something like 75% of his passes the rest of the game. And look, we've seen now the ceiling of what this offense can be and how good they can be. And, you know, you can only imagine that it's going to continue to get better, you know, the more that this team works together on it.
Well, I mean, Manning and Brady are certainly two exceptional quarterbacks. I think the one area where I think a better deep ball than Ben Roethlisberger.
Well, you know, you can make some arguments out there, but he is, you know, he has struggled at times during his career, but this year certainly isn't one of them. And another thing that he does is he moves out of the pocket well and is able to throw on the run, the deep ball in addition. And it certainly does help when you have guys like Marcus Wheaton and Martavis Bryant getting the separation in the secondary that you know that they've been able to get in the last several games. And you know, let's not forget about Antonio Brown. He's able to stretch the field as well. So, you know, as long as they continue to show that they're willing to throw the ball in the air 20 yards or more past the line of scrimmage and complete those passes on top of it, it's just going to clear everything out in the center of the field. And while Heath Miller didn't have a great game you know, last night against the Ravens, you know, he's going to get his, and you know it's coming. He's going to have those games where he's going to need to catch seven or eight balls. And like I said, it's great to see Marcus Wheaton bounce back as well. And then you've got guys like Lance Moore, who's the fourth wide receiver now on this team moving forward, and he's a veteran and more than capable himself.
Okay, so let's, you know, moving forward, I think right now New England, Denver and Pittsburgh, to me right now, the three best teams in the AFC. Would that be accurate?
I think you have Denver, I think you have New England, then I think you have the rest. Boy, San Diego sure has come back to earth. If you would ask me 3 weeks ago, I would have you know, put a stone cold lock on the Chargers making the playoffs. But now, you know, they've tumbled back to earth. You've got Miami, they're playing good football. They're 5-3. Buffalo's 5-3. Cleveland's not playing bad ball right now. It's wide open. Kansas City's 5-3 right now. The Steelers have will play Kansas City later on in the season. The important thing for this team right now at 6-3 is they've made it through. They bounced back after having a slow, a few slow games against teams that they probably should have beaten. They've got the Jets and the Titans coming up in the next two games. Both of those games are on the road. They absolutely have to win the games that they're supposed to win, and this is two of them. If they do that, they're going to set themselves up for a solid run after the bye, and that includes two games against the Cincinnati Bengals, and undoubtedly those will probably end up determining the AFC North.
Dave, it was a pleasure. Appreciate it very much.
Steve, let's talk next week after a win. I enjoy this.
I bet you do. Thanks, Dave.
All right, thank you.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
All right. Now, I am taking the radio group out to dinner on Friday night. I Googled all the one-star restaurants in Bloomington, and ironically, a gigantic list came up. And
the one-stars.
So I said, I'll take you guys out to eat.
Does it need a drive-through to qualify?
I think so. there are two guys that are having milkshakes sitting in front. No. So, Jack told Jack, of course, says that he says, I may work out in the morning and not eat all day. Oh, I sense the bar tab will be high.
No comment.
I sense because I'm picking up the tab and the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah.
The bill, that'll go that direction.
Yes. Yes. So I have reservations. Looking forward to it. Friday night. And it's a place called Grazzi, which actually is very nice. We've actually eaten there before. But I told the guys, I said, I Googled all the one-star restaurants in Bloomington. I said, hey, I feel good. I'm going to make it in such a way where Applebee's looks like it's the place to go. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com. Just remember, you can make any offer look really good if you do it on your terms. Rich Scarcella, Red Eagle, next hour. Next half hour from the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, it's 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by the wonderful people, the caring people at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. They go the extra mile for their customers. They care about their customers very much. They know how personal insurance truly is. That's Purdy Insurance. The wonderful Purdy people at Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. It's been a rough afternoon for Kevin because he can't wait to get into that Lincoln because right now his seat is not heated.
It's warm, but it's not heated.
I think you just turned off three quarters of the audience.
I'm talking about the chair. I don't know what you're talking about.
All I know is right now there are a lot of people that are disillusioned by that statement. All right.
By the way, speaking of going home, who actually thought it would be a good idea to go back to Eastern Standard Time? I mean, I don't mind getting up when it's dark, but I don't like going home when it's dark. All right. I just thought I'd share that.
Okay, great.
Coming up right tomorrow, now, more random thoughts.
I think we should name the show that. Steve Jones along with Random Thoughts.
It's like that Saturday Night Live thing, Deep Thoughts. Random Thoughts with Kevin Herr.
No, I'll just go with Random Thoughts. We'll leave Deep out. Oh, now you seem bitter.
No, just laughing.
All I know is that, I mean, the series of text messages I have from Drew Kelly about your heated seat.
I don't even want to know.
While being funny or not airable.
No, I don't imagine.
All right, Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. We have a lot to talk about with Penn State football. Rich, let's get to it here. What do you see with the pros and the cons out of what you've watched, not just Saturday, but maybe the last couple of weeks?
I'm going to be a casual fan of the game, and I'm going to be real simple. Penn State has a very, very, very good defense. And a very, very poor poor right now offense. That's pretty simple, I know.
Right.
Without getting into play calling, who's, you know, who's playing what, do, you know, what fitting, you know, round holes into square pegs, that, you know, whatever. It's pretty simple, Steve, and I don't know if you agree or disagree. I think the defense has played great. I think they're as good as any defense in the Big Ten, at least, for sure.
Right.
Probably in the country. The defense has kept Penn State in games. I think the offense obviously has its limitations because of the issues on the offensive line. I don't think there's – I think everything stems from that. You look back at last year in the NFL, Eli Manning all of a sudden became a horrible quarterback. Why? Because the New York Giants offensive line was struggling big time.
Right.
And I think it's pretty simple to see. I don't – you know, the people are calling about the playbook – you know, about Christian Hackenberg, about the running game, whatever. It boils down to one simple fact. The offensive line is struggling, and we know why it's struggling. It's inexperienced. It's young, and that's the way it is. I mean, that's what we're facing.
Right.
Or what we're seeing, excuse me.
Right.
What we're seeing.
When I try to look back a little bit at history, and a team that stuck out to me was Penn State's 1975 team.
Okay.
And in that 1975 team, they struggled offensively. They could run the ball better, but they could not throw the ball in 1975. They had Chris Barr as a place kicker. That's Sam Ficken. But they also could punt the ball and could change field positions. They're losing, on the average... trying to think what the number is. I think they're losing 14 yards per possession right now over the four-game losing streak.
Yep.
How tough is that when there's a certain formula you need, and one, and in other words, you're not playing great offensively, so that's an accepted part, okay?
Right.
But when a key part is the ability to change field position to set things up, you're not getting that.
No. No, it's pretty clear that the punting has been a thorn. It's been an issue. It's been an issue from day one. Again, you have two young guys. I don't question their work ethic by any stretch of the imagination, but they just don't seem to have it. I don't know what they're kicking like in practice, but in games, they just can't kick it well on a consistent basis. And that has hurt the whole Penn State team. Offense, defense, whatever. I mean, you look at Maryland's longest scoring drive on Saturday was 48 yards.
Right.
And it had nothing to do with Penn State turnovers except, I mean, by the offense, it had obviously the fumble kickoff return by Grant Haley was a big play in the game. But the other three scores came as a result of poor field position because of the punting.
Right. And that's a big part of it. I mean, there's no. I mean, because if you're going to play that chess match, you need that important component in the chess match, to help you out. I thought the coverage, for the most part, was pretty good on Saturday in the mode of look, just kick it straight away and quote, we will cover it with the other 10 guys. That part seemed to work a little bit better.
I thought the punt coverage was excellent, except for the last punt, which Diggs returned 15 yards. I mean, that was a big play in the game, too.
No question.
But I thought the punt coverage was better, you know, with the limitations on offense, you know, to be a successful team, you not only have to have a superior defense, you must be very good in the kicking game. And outside Sam Ficken, Penn State is not.
That's the interesting part about Ficken. I'll liken it back again to the 75 reference. Chris Barr had an awesome 75 season, and he kicked long-distance field goals. The interesting part about this situation is you feel if Penn State gets the ball to the 30, Rich, don't you, that Penn State's going to get points because of Sam Ficken.
The key is getting it
to the 30.
Yes. Steven, I agree with you. The way he's kicking the ball right now, I cannot disagree with you. I am so happy for this kid, for what he's been through, and I know everybody who's listening has heard, you know, knows his story, so I don't want to have to go over it, but he is as impressive a Penn State player as I've met. To deal with what he's had to deal with early in his career and the fact that he's kicking, he's having a great senior year, and the fact that what he does off the field in the classroom. I just think he is really, really impressive.
No question. When you went into the media room on Saturday, obviously this was a frustrating loss for them, no question. Mm-hmm. What did you sense in going through the room, not just about mood of the team, but resolve?
Well, I think the first thing is obvious frustration. What, you know, the I don't know, five guys I talked to, it was pretty clear that they were frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think I think there, you know, there's a resilience team going back to 2012, you know, and I think they're going to depend upon that. And if they could use the frustration to, you know, to carry them through these next 3-4 weeks, you know, I think they can end up with a half decent season.
Which then brings us to this week's game. Indiana is in one of those interesting situations, Rich, where it's transition a year ago. Nate Sudfeld, Cam Kaufman, and Trey Roberson.
Yeah.
They had three quarterbacks that made it very interesting. Kaufman transfers out at the end of the season because he looked at the landscape and said, pretty crowded here. Roberson surprises everybody in July, and he transfers to Illinois State. That leads Sudfeld. Then he gets hurt. Then the backup gets hurt.
Yep.
It's a totally different team that they're facing now compared to what you thought they would face when they beat Missouri.
Oh, there's no question about it. And, you know, I know they've passed – they've struggled big time in the passing game the last 2 weeks. I don't think they hit 100 yards in either game. And, you know, that's not good for the Hoosiers against the Penn State defense that's one of the top 5 or 10 in the country. But I think, and I think I've said this to some people here since the Northwestern game, that every game, with the exception, I didn't think Ohio State would be as close as it was, and Michigan State, I think every other game is going to be a dogfight for Penn State because of the issues on the offense and because of the issues on the special teams. And I don't think this week is any exception. I think that, you know, the favorable matchup for Penn State, again, is the Penn State defense against the Indiana offense.
Right.
But, you know, with what's going on offense and with the special teams, it's just going to be a tough game every week.
Did you feel that more carries, more touches by Akil Lynch, and I think he had 17 carries in this game, do you see that as something that is can be of more benefit to the running game as to how it had played out before?
I do. He had 21 carries. He still only averaged, I think, 2.7 or 2.8 yards, whatever it was.
Yes.
I just think he's a more north-south runner than Bill Belton. I think Bill Belton is a shiftier runner, has more moves. But I think what the Penn State offense and the Penn State offensive line needs right now is somebody who's a more north-south runner. And I do think Akil Lynch is the best option they have right now.
Obviously, I'm sure you tried to get around the crowd that is around Christian Hackenberg at the end of the game. What is the sense with you about him?
I think, first of all, mentally, I think he's extremely tough. I mean, he has taken a pounding this season. He has not blamed the offensive line, and at least in interviews, hasn't blamed the coaches. I know what a lot of us saw and a lot of people at home saw on TV. There was some animated discussions on the sideline Saturday with offensive coordinator John Donovan and when he was on the phone with quarterbacks coach Ricky Ronnie, but I think that's just heat of the moment, part of the game, frustrated with his struggles and the offense's struggles. I think he's a really tough, mentally tough and physically tough kid, and I think he'll fight his way through this. And I think he understands what's going on with this team this year. And you know, I think after this year is over, he's going to be better off for it. Even if he can survive, as long as he can stay standing.
It turned out that my brother was on the field the final 5 minutes of the game, and
the last hit on the sideline.
Mm.
Okay. My brother was within 5 feet of where it happened.
Uh-huh.
Maybe 10 feet. He said, "Steve, I've never seen a guy get hit that hard." He said, "I felt like all the air came out of him and he got up." And that,
yeah.
I mean, that tells you a lot. I mean, he said, I was shocked how hard he got hit.
Yes. And I will say this, I thought overall the officiating was decent on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
Under tough circumstances.
Yep.
But if the Marcus Allen hit on Stephon Diggs on an incomplete pass near the sideline was a 15-yard penalty, then that was a 15-yard penalty at the end of the game, the hit on Hackenberg.
Right.
And I just think, Steve, he's been sacked 30 times. I can't even guess how many other times he's been knocked down. I wish I had taken count. And he keeps getting back up and keeps getting back up. And, you know, he's made some bad decisions. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that, and I think he's made them almost always under duress. You know, and it's just one of those things. When an offensive line is not effective, it can make the quarterback look bad at times.
Right. And the same, there's so many dominoes to that. For example, say they want to go max protect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, idealistically, you'd love to throw five out there and have them try and track down five guys and go through a progression. But if you go max protect, okay, maybe you buy him a second, but that puts a lot more on three guys to get open.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many dominoes to this that are interesting. You go back to Sam Ficken. Here's a domino for you. Because of the NCAA sanction, they won't have Sam Ficken next year. Why? Because one of the sanctions happened to be you were free to transfer without having to sit out a year, and Anthony Farrah transferred to Texas, and they were going to redshirt Ficken that year. No redshirt had to play.
That's actually a good point, yeah.
I mean, there's so many dominoes to this that I think people have not thought of, and that's one of them.
Yeah, I mean, Stephen, this is my opinion, and I'd love to hear what you think, but don't you think this was going to happen in this year, whether it was under Bill O'Brien or James Franklin, that, you know, the numbers, they would take a hit with the numbers, especially this year?
Rich, I did, I think, a dozen speaking engagements this year, a dozen of them, and I was candid with everybody in each one, and I said, look, when I talked to Bill O'Brien starting in 2012, he was candid with me saying that 14 and 15 really worried him. Especially 14 really worried him. And even last year when we had talked, when they were able to get some scholarships back, 14, because you're not going to get immediate relief.
Right.
14 really, really concerned him as to what they could and couldn't do based on what other people have. And I told people that at every – and I've told – obviously, as Brian knows, I've done that in this show over and over again with people. I think I've been pretty square with people from day one about this going back to April. So since you asked, that's what I've been telling people.
Yeah, I mean, you hate to keep going back to that, but
– I agree.
These are the facts.
Right.
This is what – this team is dealing with, and I hate to criticize any college athletes, you know, for their performance on the field.
Sure.
But the fact is the offensive line is struggling. I don't think that's a secret.
Right.
And it's a direct result of the sanctions. It is. I mean, if you don't admit that, then you're fooling yourself.
Well, someone in the pregame show on Saturday asked about a scholarship punter, why they don't have a scholarship punter.
Oh.
No, that's a good, legitimate question. There's no
it
problem
is.
With that. I mean, considering how it's gone so far, yet when you have 11 scholarships you give out 1 year, then it's almost the same story the next year. You have to make decisions in other spots, and a scholarship punter is not one of your options.
No.
And that's, again, it goes back to circumstances where I don't like going back to the sanctions, but there has to be a reality check and a reality conversation that, for example, your place kicker next year should be Sam Ficken without sanctions. But because they had to play him, because Farah transferred and could transfer without sitting out.
Mm-hmm.
Voila.
Yeah, we could. I mean, we could go down the league. You're right. There's such a domino effect, like with the sanctions, and then there's a domino effect on offense with the struggles on the line, and
no
what
doubt.
It prevents you from doing. I mean, it prevents you from doing a lot.
Exactly.
And I think people. I mean, I think most people who know the game understand that. I do. But I understand. On the other hand, I do understand the frustration of the fans because,
yes.
You know, I get, oh, it's so hard to watch. And I understand that. Well,
right.
Don't you think it's hard to watch for the coaches too?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, don't you think they're frustrated too? I mean, geez. Anyway, the bottom line is, if these next three games are winnable games, just like last week was,
no doubt.
And if they can win these three games and finish, and I mean, Again, I'm not counting them.
Oh, no.
I'm not going to say they're going to get blown out by Michigan State, but that's going to be a tough game to win. But if they can get to seven wins, I think that's an accomplishment.
No question. And you look at the three games here: a 1-point game, a double overtime game, mm-hmm. and a 5-point game
yep.
on the road. Now, could they have won all three games? No question. They are a collective. I would say they are a collective 10 plays away from being 7-1.
Okay, but on the other hand, Steve,
but they're also a collective
2-6.
Huh? They're also a collective 10 plays from the opposite.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is a balancing. There's a
yeah.
I mean, there's no question that the Central Florida game, the Rutgers game. I mean, that's so.
Yeah.
Your point is very well taken. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So if they do win seven, to me, with what they're dealing with,
yeah.
that's an accomplishment.
Exactly. Michigan State, Ohio State, East Lansing, Saturday night. Thoughts?
Before I saw what the folks in Las Vegas established the line as, I thought Michigan State. The fact that it's either 3 or 4, at least the last time I checked, that would scare me a little bit if I was a gambler, if I was planning to bet on Michigan State. So I don't know, but I still think if Michigan State plays well, they'll win the game, and I think they're the better team. So I'll stick with that. I'll say that Michigan State wins that game by 7 points.
Yeah, I've felt since day one of this year that Michigan State was, to me, the favorite in the division, and I've said that. So I haven't changed my mind on that. The Barrett kid certainly is the X factor in the game. If he plays well,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think setting bothers him. I think he played pretty well here. But if he plays well, then for Ohio State, that bodes well.
I just think, in my opinion, Michigan State is a more complete team.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I think they're the best team in the Big Ten. Now,
right.
Does that mean that's a guarantee they'll win Saturday? No. But I do think they're the best team in the Big Ten.
Rich, it is always a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you Friday.
Anytime, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thanks, my friend. Cannot say enough great things about him. He brings a very calm perspective to everything. And he's right. Look, Penn State's 5-10 plays away from being 7-1. They're also 5-10 plays away from being 2-6. And that's how close this has been. We've talked about margin of error. They're closer than you think. As frustrating as it's been. By the way, Stephon Diggs has been suspended by the Big Ten for the game against Michigan State for the incident in the pregame with Penn State. And Randy Etzel's been reprimanded by the conference. But Stephon Diggs has been suspended for one game by the Big Ten, which means he will not play against Michigan State on November 15th. A little breaking news for you at the end. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury.